This podcast is supported by Understood Explains. As parents, we are often having to figure out things as we go, and that is very true for our children's education. And to help you out, I want to tell you about a podcast called Understood Explains. This season is hosted by teacher and special education expert Uliana Ortube, and she discusses all the things you'd want to know about individual education plans, or IEPs, what they are, why they're needed, who benefits from them, and what to expect when you have meetings with teachers. I could have really used this podcast when my son had an IEP for speech when he was six. I was overwhelmed trying to understand the process and what everything meant. The episode on Understood Explains, Does My Child Need an IEP, was the kind of info that would have really helped me get the most out of the educational support of the IEP for my son. And if you need that kind of support, I really recommend this podcast. To listen to Understood Explains, search for Understood Explains in your podcast app. That's Understood Explains. Welcome to Mom and Mind. I'm perinatal psychologist and host Dr. Kat. There is more to the story than just postpartum depression. This podcast aims to share it all, from personal stories and lived experience to experts who break down the ups and downs of life from getting pregnant, pregnancy, perinatal loss, and postpartum adjustment to new parenthood. While this is not psychotherapy or medical advice, it is all of the stuff you ever wanted to know about mental health and new parenthood. Welcome to Mom and Mind. I'm your host, Dr. Kat. On our episode today, we are talking relationships in the pregnancy and postpartum period. Our guest today, psychotherapist Kara Hoppe, is going to be talking a little bit about her own experience through postpartum anxiety and depression and how having a new baby changed her marriage and the inspiration to write this book, Baby Bomb, a relationship survival guide for new parents. She wrote this book along with co-author Dr. Stan Tatkin to help new parents navigate relationship changes that they might not have seen coming. And for any of you who had a major life transition, like welcoming a child into your life, you know that it does change things. But we're not often given a guide on how to manage, both during pregnancy and postpartum, on how to stay connected as a couple, how to communicate as a couple, and how to grow together as a new family. Kara's going to be talking about some of the principles in the book about secure functioning in the relationship and putting the couple first, and how to support and maintain intimacy as a couple. Kara has spent more than a decade as an inclusive therapist working with individuals and couples towards healing and growing and toward becoming grounded, integrated people with better access to their own instincts, wisdom, and creativity. As you listen into our discussion today, I'm sure that there are things that will resonate for you that you'll be able to identify with, and also great tips and tricks on how to communicate with your partner if this is something you're just beginning to think about. Welcome, Kara. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Kat. So nice to be here with you.
Thanks. I'm so glad you're here and really excited to have you talk about how to help couples navigate through this crazy thing called parenthood and entry into parenthood. That's one of those things like, oh, why didn't they tell us about this? So that's kind of what you're going to help people with through your book, Baby Bomb. And I know you've, from talking with you a little bit, you have had your own personal experience in perinatal mental health stuff. So maybe we can start there and find out a little bit more about your experience.
Sure. Yeah, I think it's so important that we all talk about our experiences, share them, normalize them, destigmatize them. That umbrella of all the things that we don't talk about when it comes to parenthood
right.
is large.
Right, right. So big.
So I would say for me personally, I had experience with both perinatal mood disorders with some anxiety and depression. Mm-hmm. And then my marriage to my husband also went through a massive transformation, ending up being like a leveling up, but it was quite a journey.
Right. That's a great way to encapsulate that. Mm-hmm.
And to which I didn't expect any of that. I was lucky and I had like a pretty easy pregnancy. I liked being pregnant. And then when we had our son, I remember about early postpartum, I would start a lot of sentences. Being a therapist, I'm sure you can relate to this, Kat. I would start a lot of sentences with, I'm noticing I have a lot of anxiety right now.
Right. Yep. Yep.
and then it would launch into whatever. And I remember thinking, like, I'm on high alert and my son's alive. I guess that's how it works.
Right.
You know, and like there is like a biology to that, like with our brains, like literally changing in order to keep our babies alive. But for me, it had like a bit more anxiety and then also like a bit of depression. And it was something that, as a clinician who I've worked with couples and individuals for like 10 years at this point, I didn't even notice it.
Right.
That I was struggling as much as I was.
Yeah. It takes a while, especially if you don't know what to look for or you don't know that this could be happening. It just, I think you kind of made a nod to it as you were speaking, that it just like, this is must be how it is. I'm just hyper vigilant and I have a baby.
Right. And I'm very like, and I feel disconnected from my own self.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was like, that's motherhood. And there is, of course, like that, like disconnect from old self and the grieving and be, you know, leaving one stage of life and moving to another stage of life.
Yeah.
But for me, I was completely out of touch with like what made me happy as myself, as my own human being. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yes, 100%. I have had that feeling, and I'm pretty much everybody I talk to, anyways, who comes to therapy for this kind of stuff is coming for some level of that kind of fog and like, what am I doing? And who am I? And
Yeah. My husband actually noticed it. He was like, had the wherewithal where he noticed our marital problems more. I was in more survival mode, as like I was doing exclusive breastfeeding and I was healing from the birth that was traumatic. And just like one foot in front of the other. My husband, Charlie, kind of noticed that I had changed. And I remember he said to me at some point, like I came downstairs, I just put my son down from a nap and he looked at me and he was like, "Hey, you probably need some time to yourself. Why don't you like, I'll take the baby monitor. Like, why don't you go and like do something?"
Right.
And it was a really like disorienting moment for me, Kat, because pre-parenthood, I really knew myself. I knew what I liked. I knew what I liked to do. I had hobbies. I had creative passions. And then like in motherhood, I felt so disconnected from that part of me. So I like, literally was like, okay, I have a few hours and I don't have to be a mother and I don't know what I want to do. And it was really alarming and a strange moment.
Yeah, for sure. I wonder if you said your husband noticed the marital difficulties. He noticed your shift. How did you feel when he said, go take a break? Did you feel like guilt or did you feel worried or did sometimes people have a range of feelings of like, well, I'm supposed to do this, or I don't know if he can do it the right way, or, you know, any kind of like discomfort with not managing everything.
No, I didn't have, I didn't have that experience, but what was so wild was I didn't even consider not managing everything until that moment. And so, it hadn't even crossed my mind that I would be tracking his food, his naps, like my own body and my own, you know, checking my breasts. Am I ready to feed? Like, I hadn't even considered delegating not the right word, but sharing that level of responsibility with him. It hadn't even crossed my mind. And then when he suggested it, it was like, whoa. Okay.
Sure. Here's like, that baby.
Here's the monitor, the whoosh sound, you know?
Yeah.
And then it was like, but then like connecting with myself was the discomfort.
Totally.
That was my discomfort. Like, it wasn't discomfort in handing over the monitor. It was like, who am I?
Right. Right. I mean, the amount of responsibility and attention to detail that you took on without even like fully realizing you had done that's a lot. And in order to do that, you kind of do have to put yourself aside. There's only so much room to take care of a brand new baby and yourself. What a moment. Yeah. So I imagine this example and many others are part of what helped you to realize that you needed some help or a different kind of support anyways, as a couple in your relationship and eventually leading you to write this book. What were some of the things in the relationship changes that you noticed?
Well, I noticed my own discomfort in how much I needed Charlie. Like, I remember at one point realizing when Jude was like, I don't know, a couple of weeks old, we were learning breastfeeding. It was challenging. Another thing I didn't know was going to be challenging.
Right.
Was challenging. And I remember I got him latched and I was so stoked and he was eating and like it was working. And then all of a sudden I realized I was really thirsty, as it breastfeeding makes you thirsty. And then I went to get up and I couldn't physically get up to go get myself water. And I asked, and that was like a dizzying vulnerability.
Sure.
Like, I need you, Charlie. I need your help. I need your help taking care of my physical body right now. Mm-hmm. And I don't think, I mean, I hadn't ever needed anybody probably since I was a baby like that.
Yeah.
Like to like go and get me a glass of water and
right.
stuff. So I remember being like, whoa, I'm going to have to get some sea legs here about like how much we need each other to parent our son, how to take care of each other. I need his eyes on me right now as I do this motherhood deep dive.
Right.
I need to be allowed to be witnessed like that. And that felt like at the time really, really vulnerable.
For sure. So, right. And speaking to like the amount of independence, not really needing, just being able to do what you needed to do when you needed to do it.
Yeah.
Wow.
That was hard for me to adjust to. I was really used to being like, peace out. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. You know, like I got this, I got that, like independent lady. And then it was like, I felt like all of a sudden my life had become a series of committee meetings about like going to the bathroom, taking a shower, you know,
for everything. Yeah.
For everything. Yeah.
Right. Did your husband talk to you about what it was like for him to be needed in a different way?
He did. He is such a lovely, warm-hearted, open person. And we picked really well with each other, even though we were really struggling postpartum, post-baby bomb.
Mm-hmm.
We picked really well with each other. And he really opened up to the opportunity to lend a hand.
No, nice.
And he was like, I mean, we had talked before we had Jude that we wanted to parent together. I didn't want Jude to grow up watching me do everything.
Right.
I really like, and Charlie and I like talked about that. And so before Jude was on the scene, we had an agreement that he was going to jump in. And it was really beautiful watching him become a father and jumping in and helping out with Jude and helping out with me. That was like my own discomfort, my own growing edge, my own practice to receive that gratefully and joyfully. Thanks for getting me the water. I needed it.
Right.
And you know, because it brought up like feelings of guilt or like I should be doing this. When, you know, I was healing. My body was healing. I didn't have that perspective of like what I wasn't able to see myself and like what I had just been through. Right. And he's seeing me and he's like attuned, you know, which I know is very fortunate for both of us, you know, and that's why I wrote the book, was to help people with that attunement.
Yeah.
Because it's an important part of, you know, parenting or partnering after your parents rather.
Yeah.
But for me, I had to get used to being observed. And that was, like I said, my growing edge, Kat.
Yeah.
It wasn't easy for me.
Yeah, for sure.
And he did like say, I mean, like he was more attuned to the marital stuff going on. And he said that I would push him away. Like I would say like, I got this, when it was so clear that I didn't. And that was really frustrating to him. He was like, why are you putting roadblocks and walls up? Like, you know, you need help. I want to be the person that helps you. I want that intimacy with you. And you're like,
no way, man. Yeah.
Yeah. So
that is a tough adjustment, even though, and to you, like to what you were saying before, you guys talked about this, but that I think that speaks to how difficult it is in the postpartum period with the fogginess you feel and the exhaustion that you feel. And even with the best laid out plans, you were describing, you know, your husband kind of sees stuff from, not from the outside specifically, but outside of your kind of physiological mental experience. And I don't know about you, but I find that for folks in the postpartum period, everything's becomes very like microscopic. You see what's in front of you and it's huge. And so the having that bigger picture of like, oh, what's going on? Why do things feel this way? Oh yeah, I'm healing. All of those things kind of go to the wayside and you're just like trying to get through the day or that moment or whatever the next challenge is.
Oh, hey, everybody. It's us, Blair and Molly, your old pals from Toddler Purgatory, two moms who are also actors, who are also creative beings, who sometimes feel stuck.
And now we're back with a whole new podcast about unsticking it, launching in January. What happens when life gets in the way of our creativity instead of nourishing it?
We talk to all sorts of guests about how to break through the mucky, gluey, sticky wall that can get between you and your creativity. We hear about their journeys, their successes, their challenges, and even their bougie coffee shop orders.
So join us, won't you, as we deep dive into how to unstick ourselves from the life gunk that can get in the way of our creative freedom.
Get out of there, life gunk.
Let us help you get back to your best creative self. Look for Unsticking It with Blair and Molly.
Wherever you listen to podcasts, starting in January.
Unsticking It with Blair and Molly. Because sometimes life sucks.
Unsticking It. I'm Margaret.
And I'm Amy.
And together we host the podcast, What Fresh Hell? Laughing in the Face of Motherhood.
Margaret, I would say you're sort of a where are my keys kind of mom.
Correct. Sometimes a where are my kids kind of mom. Well, you're aiming more of a, we were supposed to leave 35 seconds ago, Mom.
I mean, touche. In each episode of What Fresh Hell, we come at a topic from our usually completely opposite perspectives. I bring the research.
And I bring kind of the gimlet eye. Like, is that research really going to work, people?
And almost 10 million downloads later, we're still laughing.
We also talk to experts in the parenting field, plus parents with stories we can all learn from.
We make each other laugh, we challenge each other's assumptions, and we have what we think is the best parenting community on the internet.
Check out What Fresh Hell, Laughing in the Face of Motherhood, wherever you listen to podcasts.
So I know in your book, you have laid out some of these, like what... how to check in before and what to do to check in before and then how to stay connected afterward. You know, I'd love to hear more about the book here in just a minute. I think your personal experience, knowing what you know, brings such a richness to the book and being able to have that lived experience and kind of know what worked or what didn't. And then having, of course, the like psychotherapy perspective about how people work and all that good stuff. So yeah, that postpartum period is really hard to get perspective on when you're in it.
Yeah, I'm so glad you said that. I've been thinking about that phenomenon a lot lately, about the micro, just get, when life is right in front of your face, right. And that is like early parenthood. But how helpful it is to get the macro, to pull back, get the perspective about like, nobody is dying if there isn't a nap.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. Like, yeah.
You know, and like, if this latch doesn't work right now, like it's okay to pause and start again, like all of this stuff, like getting that macro is so important, getting reconnected to like the values we have, you know, like Charlie and I had, and like the couples that I work with in practice or in the couples retreat have to reconnect with that, to find their North Star again, to kind of like hold them during those moments so they can toggle between the relentlessness, the everything that happens. Like, you know, your baby is crying. They need you. You want to be there.
Right.
Of course. And then also pulling back to, you know, to the macro of like, how else can we do this, like bringing in the creativity, the perspective.
Sure. Right.
I'm not the first mother on the planet to be struggling, you know, and I won't be the last.
You know? Unfortunately, unfortunately, at the same time. Yeah. It is so hard to pull all of that in. And it's why it's nice to have a good supportive group of people around you to help with that perspective. Cause it's not like your fault that you can't see it. You're just physiologically in a zone and there it's really hard to like be self-reflective and, you know, all of that stuff when you're just trying to make sure your kid eats enough or, you know, there's not poop everywhere or whatever. Yeah. There's a lot, a newness as well. A lot of newness to take in and incorporate into your life. So in your, well, maybe we can, I'll start in a different way. What like occurred to you that you felt like I need to put like write a book about this and help couples? How did that manifest?
Thanks for asking that question. I think about this. I had to call back to that moment a lot when I was writing the book. It was so difficult. I actually finished the last four chapters during the pandemic, at the beginning of the pandemic last year. Mm-hmm. So I had to call in like spiritually, why am I doing this? But it was like, you know, I am a couple therapist. That is my jam. I love helping couples. I like to get in there and understand the system. Like I want to help couples identify their strength. I want to help couples identify like where their growing edge is, where they want to go to, what's working and what's not working. I find couples work like deeply rewarding. And so, but I wasn't, I mean, before I had Jude, I wasn't a parent. I worked with so many parents, and so much would come up in the clinical work was childcare or like parenting rather.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Disagreements about the right way and the wrong way to parent. Should we co-sleep? Should we not? Like, what are we going to do about solids? Like all of the things. You know, like nanny versus daycare versus stay-at-home parent, like all of these like ongoing conversations that when I was working with couples, I was able to help them, but not from the lived experience of actually being a parent, partner, trying to navigate that and how things can become so heated. And like there, you know, and so then once I became a parent, I was like, wow, like, this is a thing.
Oh, right. For sure. You know?
Yeah. Like Charlie and I are struggling and we were really solid. I'm a couple therapist cat.
Yeah.
And I don't know how to manage my marriage right now. My husband's telling me like, you know, like I'm concerned about us. I'm like, whoa, did that mean coming?
Right.
So then as we were like in this process, I pulled in like everything I knew from couple therapy and like Charlie and I would talk about it. And I felt like we were in this process of clawing our way back to each other.
Yeah.
Into finding intimacy, physical intimacy, emotional intimacy, being inclusive, decision-making with each other, looking at each other from the macro for the long haul. Like we want to like, you know, have this marriage intact on the other side of this.
Right. Yeah. Big goal. Bigger goal, right?
Bigger goal, yeah. And then Stan Tackin is a really good friend of mine. I trained with him for years, and he's a dear friend. And I went, Charlie and I, and Jude went over to him and Tracy, his wife's house for dinner when Jude was young. He wasn't even a year yet. And I had this very authentic moment where I just looked at Stan all of a sudden and was like, Stan, my like Charlie and I like have been going through it. Like this is a thing. I think we can help people. We should write a book about this. Like, let's bring your concept of secure functioning where two partners are like taking care of each other, sharing their hopes and fears with each other, working together that so everyone's needs are getting met. Let's take that and like apply it to expecting couples and parents really of all age children. It like doesn't go out of style. I mean, personally, I'm still working always.
It's constant. It's constant, especially because to your point, it's every different phase of a child's growth also means you have to rearrange stuff in your relationship to accommodate or you know, work on new stuff and how to work through different kinds of problems. I mean, you know, like birth and postpartum is a transition, and so is, let's say, like puberty. I mean, those kinds of things that you can use. I mean, having seen of your book, they are things that you can use at whatever transitional space. But I mean, no, your book is specifically like very clear and great for postpartum, but like the concepts of being able to kind of check in with each other and have clear communication and get care, have compassion.
Yeah. Like how to foster intimacy with your partner as you're going through like as you're living life. I think, that is timeless. Yeah, I've shared my book. I mean, like, I have couples that aren't parents, have no plans to be parents, reading my book. And they're like, this is great! You know? We're learning so much. I'm like, this is cool, you know?
For sure. Yeah, really anything that helps. Because it's tough. It's very specifically going from no children to having children is a huge, major life change. And there's just,
there's no way to know what it's going to be like until you're in it, but being able to have something to reference, like, okay, so how do we get through this? What do we do? Is awesome. Because if you're feeling lost and you don't know what to do, it's so much harder.
Right. And if you're feeling lost, that's completely natural.
Yeah.
You're in the wilderness, probably can't find your partner or like in the dark, like finding your way, you know? I mean, I think that's like very normal, that experience. Mm-hmm. You know, you have two different people becoming parents at the same time where both of them don't know what they're doing exactly. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's incredibly vulnerable becoming a mother, becoming a father, and you're witnessing each other. So there's a lot of opportunities for misattunement mm-hmm. and hurt.
Yeah.
No, that's not how you do that.
Yep.
You know, or like, you know, there's a lot of opportunities for things to go. I don't know. I don't want to, because the thing is that I'm pausing because I'm like, I don't want to pathologize it, because I actually like, I really like hold all of this in a very tender way that I think even when Charlie and I, or couples I work with, they get in a crunchy moment where, yes, there's like a, you don't do it right, you mm-hmm. know, and that can be really hurtful and like shut somebody down. And then they don't want to help the other person. And it like ripples out like that. Mm-hmm. Like that happens.
Yeah.
I think that the most important part is the repair. How do you come back together? And the cool thing is you know, this as a clinician, you can teach repair.
For sure.
Mm-hmm. You can teach, you know, your couples, you can teach yourself how to come back to each other at mm-hmm. any moment when you need to. So it's not the ruptures. The ruptures mm-hmm. should be expected, especially at a time in early parenthood where you're sleep deprived, possibly, you know, one or both couples has a perinatal mood disorder. You know, a lot of dads struggle with depression and anxiety after becoming parents too. So you can have both partners going through it. So like ruptures happen. But like, yeah, what do you do next? How do you come back together?
Absolutely. So you talk about secure functioning in the book. Is this part of that?
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So secure functioning is this idea that it's from attachment theory about mm-hmm. how you can offer your partner and your partner can offer you basically security, trust, safety, and security. And by doing that for each other, then you guys are free to go out and explore yourselves and the world, knowing that you have that, you know, like John Bowlby would say, that secure base to come back to. We do it as parents. Both parents are trying to offer their child secure attachment, knowing that their child, like communicating to their child in verbal and nonverbal ways, you're safe with me.
Right.
Your needs are important to me. Your wants are important to me. When I mess up, I'm going to keep coming towards you till I get it right.
Yeah.
We see that, like, you know, we do that somewhat naturally as parents, you know, there's like a growing edge to that, of course, but I think what a lot of people don't realize is how important it is for partners to do that to each other. And like all the goodness that can come from that sense of security with each other, like knowing that this person, you know, that you picked,
right.
You know, like it didn't happen to you and you didn't happen to them. You guys picked each other. Mm-hmm. You guys can provide each other this like very deep bond in all of its awkwardness and its crunchiness and its tenderness of, you know, that ongoing dance of partnering for life, partnering long-term. Sure. It's a long road. You know?
Yeah, right. As you were talking about that, I was thinking about your example of needing water and the vulnerability that came with that, and kind of having to see, like, almost feel it out in real time or reflect on it in real time or whatever, maybe afterwards, if you felt safe and if you were responded to the way you needed. And I could see how if it was like, well, I'm busy or I can't get you water right now, I'm doing X, Y, or Z, how that could feel not secure, and it would build potentially, unless there's like a really good reason, build in like the seeds of resentment and disconnection.
Definitely. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It would work both ways. Like if I would have said to Charlie, like, I need some water, and he would have said like, okay, but you know, in like 15 minutes or like, or just mm-hmm. said like, well, you could get your own water, or just, right, you know, right. not like met me, mm-hmm. that would have made me withdraw a bit mm-hmm. from him. I wouldn't mm-hmm. feel so safe with him anymore. And it would go the other way too. If mm-hmm. I would say like, no, you know what? That's okay. I'll get my own water when I'm done doing this. That's a little bit of a, I need push your back. Help, but I'm going to push you away.
Right, right.
And like, that would be confusing. And that could also lead to a disconnect. Like, and these are like such like yeah. micro moments.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. And you cannot attend to every single one.
Can't.
But I think we're, I don't know if you would agree, but it's like, can you have more secure connection moments than the others? It's like a, you know, let's try and have more of those and less of the other ones. Cause like you said before, there's going to be misunderstandings and missteps. And that moment you're describing in terms of the repair that you're mentioning would be like, oh man, I'm so sorry. I like should have just got you that water earlier. I don't know what I was thinking. Like that could be repaired to your point.
That should be repaired. Yes, it can be repaired. You know, and then there's yeah. that coming back, because I mean, we're human beings. We're like, we make mistakes all the time. Mm-hmm. It's unreasonable to think that we're not going to,
right?
You know? And so, yes, like coming back and being like, you know, I didn't feel good about that. I kind of blew you off when you asked mm-hmm. me for water.
Mm-hmm.
Did that hurt your feelings?
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, there's like lots, opening yeah. up, like, you know, to that. Or it could have been like, if I would have said like, no, I'm cool, when clearly I wasn't,
right.
you know, I would yeah. have to come back myself and be like, hey,
mm-hmm.
I wasn't cool. I needed your help and I pushed you away.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Right.
Please Ooh, keep
like an agreement to almost like an agreement to work on it. I know you talk about putting the couple first also in the book. And can you speak a little bit more to that, especially for people who are so used to like everything changes when the baby comes and the sole focus is the baby. Why is putting the couple first so important?
Well, it really goes back to that idea of having safety and security in your relationship with your partner. I don't think a lot of times it's intentional, like for folks to put their partnership on the back burner. I think especially when life is like right up in your face, like we right. were talking about, we don't have access to the macro, like why am I doing this in the first place with this person? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It just becomes like, you know, like
yeah.
nap to nap, feeding to feeding, uh-huh. you know, and stuff. So I think that it's a very like easy thing that happens to people. And the reason why we had the first guiding principle, the couple comes first, it's really about the couple relationship coming first, that you want to keep, I want to help partners who want this. Of course, not everybody does, and that's okay. But partners who want to have agreements with each other, where they're offering each other safety, security, care,
mm-hmm.
mutually. I'm not talking about like one person giving all and the other person taking it. That would right. not be secure functioning.
Right.
It has to be both partners jumping in feet first into the deep end. Like mm-hmm. I got your back. You're my ride or die.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'm going to see this through with you because right. I pick you. I mean, like mm-hmm. all of those ideas are part of like putting the couple first.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is like when partners, and I mean, sure, you know about this, like as a clinician too, when partners are taking care of each other, that frees your baby or your child up to be a baby or a child.
Right.
They don't have to worry about, you know, mom and, or dad and dad or mom and dad or whatever combination of partners are taking care of each other. So I'm just going to like live my life and be a baby. I'm going to like, right. you know, right. I'm not like going to get like pulled in.
Mm-hmm.
Like in what happens in like, you know, we see, I think in like a lot of, I don't want to speak for you, but I see a lot in my clinical work, you know, the system pulling children in to take care of mom or dad's
yeah.
emotional needs because mm-hmm. the partners aren't taking care of each other's emotional needs.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of this just comes from like, it just, I don't know. I think it comes from people just don't know how.
Right.
They just don't know how. They don't know that it's a possibility to mm-hmm. like rearrange your system in this way.
Mm-hmm.
And that like by rearranging your system so that like I'm taking care of my husband, my husband's taking care of me, And we have to like negotiate that on a day-to-day basis mm-hmm. and be very fluid, not rigid about it, mm-hmm. about like what it means. And like our kid is a kid. And right. I just don't think that's like a thing. Like I didn't see that growing up personally.
Sure. Right. Yes.
At well, all. Course. I did not see my parents taking care of each other's needs. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I was like filling in the gaps. That's why I became a therapist. That's why I wrote this book.
Is that why we all become therapists? I don't know. Maybe it's a stretch. Just kidding. But yeah, no, exactly. Like, and I just want to clarify for the people listening who are like non-clinicians that when you're talking about the system, you're talking about how the family works as a system.
And
sometimes like system also gets confused for like the system, like CPS or medical care or like, you know, those kinds of things. So we're talking about how the family functions with each other in that system.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Or in how the couple functions with each other in that system.
Right.
And then
how
that system impacts your child. Mm-hmm. You know, children mm-hmm. can pick up when their parents aren't getting along.
For sure.
And it scares them. Mm-hmm. They immediately like, you know, mm-hmm. wonder about their, because their whole world is us.
Right.
So if they think that like you guys aren't getting along or me and Charlie aren't getting along, they're going to mm-hmm. try to figure that out and try to mm-hmm. mitigate that because they want things
for sure.
to be safe.
Yep.
So it's really like the whole idea, even though it sounds like backwards about putting the couple first, is like in some ways like you're not taking care of the baby. It's actually the opposite. Mm-hmm. By like taking care of each other, you're offering that your child a huge sense of security and safety mm-hmm. and care
yeah.
from both people. And also you're modeling for your kid how your kid wants to be treated. Like mm-hmm. your kid's watching you two and being like, oh, so this is how relationships work. Mm-hmm. People listen to each other. They care about what each other is saying. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They say they're sorry. Like, oh, well, I want to, you know, like assuming like you want your child to grow into the world and be like a good citizen and mm-hmm. like care about other people, care about themselves, mm-hmm. you know, be like, you know, naturally leaning towards relationships.
Yep.
Valuing relationships, then you and your partner get to learn how to do that. And then that, you know, by doing mm-hmm. that, you teach your kid.
Yep. Yeah. It's work.
Work.
For sure. Yes. And fortunately, like, you know, I think for us kind of on the clinical end, we know that it can get better and we see people heal and couples heal and things feel better, but it's when you're in it and maybe you don't have a skill set, like a therapy type skill set, or you've never been to therapy, it can be hard to imagine that whatever funk you guys are in can be fixable because there might be some impasses or things that just feel impossible to work through. But with your book, you're really giving some steps on how to work through those things and how to stay connected. And, you know, books and their plug for therapy, because, hey, mm-hmm. it does help. And just based on how you talk about things, like, and you and your book come from a compassionate stance. You want couples to be together if that's what they want to be, and ultimately help to keep the family healthy.
Yeah, I want to empower partners to co-create mm-hmm. whatever kind of life they want as two equal participants with sharing of equal power with each other. And frankly, like I did not know how to do that myself. I like boots on the ground, had to learn it. I mean, of course I learned things about in training to be a couple therapist, mm-hmm. but like literally boots on the ground, practicing it with my husband and then helping couples with it, you know, in my clinical work. And then I also treat retreats based on the book. Helping couples there. But I guess what I want to say is like, yes, and you can learn to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it's a skill set that most people know. And that's the only reason why people don't know how to do it, because nobody's taught them. But like it can be taught. You and your partner can teach each other mm-hmm. what works for you guys. Not even like what I'm saying. Who mm-hmm. cares about me? Like in the book, I have this whole thing section on like insiders and outsiders. Like you two are the insiders here. Like mm-hmm. take what you want from what I say, discuss mm-hmm. it amongst yourselves and decide like what works for you guys mm-hmm. for now. Knowing it's like a live relationship that can always be revisited and refined and changed. And I'm like, that doesn't work for me now. This works for me now. I mean, you know, there has to be like a lot of flexibility and space there. And that's where the secure functioning really helps. Having that sense of safety and security, like, is a soft landing pad for you guys to just do anything you want together and create whatever you want together.
Yeah, for sure.
No one told us the truth about parenthood. Why? This is the podcast everyone needed before they had kids, because now that those little ones are here, whew, there is a lot to unpack. I'm Rachel Shepardota, and I am your host for the podcast No One Told Us, where we tell the truth about parenting and let you in on all the stuff you really should have known about before having kids. I am the founder of Hey Sleepy Baby, but this podcast is so much more than sleep. We'll be diving into all the topics that you really care about and need to know while you do your best job raising those adorable, tidy humans. Our goal is to just make you feel less alone and less overwhelmed. There are so many things that no one tells us before becoming a parent, and I think that we should really pull back the curtain on becoming a first-time or second-time mom or dad to share the good, the bad, and the ugly. We'll have a little education, a little fun, and a whole lot of heart that goes into each and every episode. So join me and our amazing guests each week to hear us talk about what no one told us.
Are you overwhelmed by the things that get in the way of you doing what you want to do? Are you looking for ways to simplify life to better align with your values? Do you want to create space in your schedule so you have room for more of the good stuff? Play, joy, relationships, gratitude, and more? If you answered yes to any of these questions, I invite you to check out Edit Your Life, a podcast to help you edit the unnecessary from your life so you have more room to enjoy the awesome. Through episodes with me, Christine Coe, and a range of super smart, compassionate, and thoughtful guests, you'll come away with big picture insights and practical ways to declutter your home, schedule, and mental space without getting bogged down by perfection. I have always believed that small moments and actions matter tremendously. My goal is to help you find agency and space in your life through doable baby steps that will leave you feeling accomplished instead of overwhelmed. Check out Edit Your Life wherever you enjoy your podcasts.
I mean, you go over quite a bit of information and topics in the book. And one that I want to specifically touch on before our time runs out is you do have a chapter in talking about the sexual relationship and keeping intimacy alive through all of this. And I know very specifically from postpartum folks who are maybe the primary caregiver being touched all the time and then needing time where you're just absolutely not touched is a very real part of this transition. And that does affect connection in the couple. Can you talk a little bit more about that and like how to navigate staying connected?
Yeah. Thanks for asking that question. It's so important. Because being overtouched as a primary caregiver is very real, but it's a specific kind of touch also. It's a giving and it's a generosity. It's a sharing of my body. It's a sharing of my space. It's a sharing of like my time. My time is not my own. You cry, I'm there for you.
Right.
Like it's very specific, kind of it like one-sided. You know, I think about like in a generosity scale, like there's so much generosity on the side of the primary. And that, and the baby is not, I mean, like there is a bit of like co-regulation that of course happens like with parents and babies, but the baby's not saying like, thanks so much, mom.
Right.
Thanks for like getting up and feeding me again. Thanks for like holding me and holding me during my entire nap. You know, you're not getting any of that reinforcement. So it kind of adds more to the generosity.
Yeah.
So I think what can really help with that is if partner is like a non-primary is aware of that and can say, so this is like, obviously for like non-birthing partners, like I see you caring for a child and you do X, Y, and Z so well. Like nobody wants their hard work to be unnoticed. So I think like noticing the primary's hard work can go a long way in terms of just being seen and valued. For that generosity. And then also offering up touch where there isn't anything wanted back. Like, may I hold you and watch a show with you?
Right.
I just, can I rub your back? Can I pour a bath for you? Like all of these ways where like the non-primary parent or the non-birthing parent is like offering up care to help like with any overtouch.
Right.
And know that like by doing that, like if we use the idea of secure functioning, by that partner in making that investment, it does come back to them. Because that you know, the overtouched parent is like, oh, I'm seen, I'm valued, I'm cared for. This person doesn't just want something more for me.
Right.
And it can be so subtle, Kat. Like it doesn't have to be these grand gestures.
Right.
Just like, can I hold you, can end up with like an overtouched parent sharing about the overtouch. Mm-hmm. And that can lead to, I mean, that is intimacy right there.
Right, right. Absolutely. So in the communication.
Yeah, exactly. In the communication. And then like, I think like any physical contact counts, you know, like hugging, grabbing your partner's face. I love you, you like, you know, just, you know, going in a squeeze and leaving. All of that starts to help like a primary, I think, get more in touch with themselves as a person, as a sexual being again, because that just becomes so disconnected in motherhood, you know?
Right. In part, there's so many things getting in the way of everything, just the exhaustion for sure is part of it. You know, just needing to sleep. And for a lot of couples anyways, I'm pretty sure that like bedtime is associated with sex time or like some kind of intimacy that's not necessary. I mean, when there's a baby around or kids around, it tends to be anyways for couples with no kids, that's whenever, but, yeah. So, I mean, by the time people are winding down to go to sleep and all the things have been checked off the list of what to do, that's not often the time. Like rest needs to happen and restoration needs to happen. And like understanding the ebb and flow of that, like just because, you know, birthing person is not really ready to be like sexually intimate, there might be other ways of closeness and intimacy that are available. And it doesn't necessarily, oh, it's just so complex because it, you know, when it's not discussed, then other partners feel rejected and then they pull away and it can get really difficult fairly quickly, I think. Mm-hmm. And so I love that you're going into an explanation that people can really think about and understand and reflect and use in their relationship.
Yeah. Thank you. I mean, I really want to help people. It is such a journey, you know, it's so natural to feel rejected. Like there's no taboo about the feelings,
right?
You know, it would be the act, like the behavior. Mm-hmm. If I feel rejected, and so I'm going to act out and I'm going to pull away when you need water,
right,
or like something like that, rather than like, you know, to any listeners, if you're feeling rejected, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. You lost your partner. You've lost that intimacy with your partner. We talk about it in the book as like a winter. Like your relationship is in like a winter, and you know, and both partners don't necessarily know how to bring about spring again, even with like the best intentions, you know, and it's such a, like a tender time. And so it's a time for these like awkward conversations.
Oh, yeah,
You know, like I love how you're parenting. I don't want to change anything about this. I just want to keep our relationship clean. I'm feeling rejected and I'm missing you. And I just want you to know that.
Fantastic. I mean, like anybody who's listening is like furiously writing down notes like that, of how to say that exactly the same way. I mean, it's a beautiful approach. It's acknowledging the connection and it's acknowledging that you're not there to like bash someone over the head and there's something amiss. There's something off. And that's like taking care of each other, taking care of the relationship and bringing it up that way. Not like, oh, why don't you touch me anymore? Like that, you know, obviously people are going to like talk like that sometimes because human, but like to have real examples like you've given about how to say it and how to form that sentence, I think is super beneficial to people.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. I mean, again, I just want to help. I wrote this book. It's very thin. Like no words are wasted. I know the resources are very low in early parenthood. And I like suggest for couples, like you buy 2 copies of the book. Like, don't just like have, this is not meant to be another book on mom's to-do list, fix marriage. Like this book was written inclusively for both partners to learn how to do this together and to bring both of their brains and their creativity and their ideas and their attachment styles and their nervous systems and have all the language for it and like really talk about it with each other about like, how can we do mm-hmm. this? That's the mm-hmm. difference of secure functioning. It's not like, how can I make this work? It's how can we make this work? How can mm-hmm. we bring about spring? Yeah. You know, like what would work for you? What would work for me? Let's find a way to make this happen for us. Like mm-hmm. that inclusive language, you know?
Yeah.
And like, and it might be also like a mom listening might hear like her partner might say to her, like in the most beautiful way, I feel rejected. I just miss you. And you might not feel that way. You might not feel like connected to your sexuality or, mm-hmm. or your desire or wanting pleasure. And you might not miss it. And there's definitely. Nothing wrong with that. That's mm-hmm. not to say you're not going to experience spring again.
Mm-hmm.
It's mm-hmm. just like in that moment, but like what your partner did was plant a seed for something to grow.
Mm-hmm.
Like you can just be with that and think and say like, thanks for telling me.
Mm-hmm.
It's right. important for me to hear that. I mm-hmm. forgot I used to like sex.
Like oh, I forgot real. That used to be,
all right.
I forgot there used to be a way I had fun, you know?
Uh-huh, uh-huh, for sure. Mm-hmm.
So thanks for bringing the attention.
Uh-huh.
Let me be with that, you know?
Uh-huh, uh-huh. Yes. Oh, that's great. That's really good. You mentioned before that you have a couples retreat. Can you say a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I do. I always, when I was writing Baby Bomb, a survival guide for new parents, I always wanted it to be teachable. Mm-hmm. I wanted to help walk couples, partners through this journey, whether they were expecting new parents or children of all ages, to work towards secure functioning. And the book is really helpful, obviously. Like I think it's like has exercises and tons of case examples, and hopefully mm-hmm. all of your listeners can see themselves in some way
yeah.
in the different partners that are talked about in the book. But also, yeah, I'm going to be teaching virtual couples retreats. They're 5 weeks long. That's on Saturdays in the morning. You can learn more about it at karahoppe.com. Anyone who's interested, about really just doing a deep dive with me and your partner on learning how to repair your partnership or learning more intimacy, mining mm-hmm. your partnership for intimacy, or if you're expecting, really wanting to solidify things before you have that baby bomb explode
yeah.
into your life and your partnership.
Is this like a class format or is it one couple with you?
No, it's an intimate group of couples, interactive. We're going to have Q&As. We're going to have experiential learning. And then I'm going to teach you 5 of the different principles and make sure all the couples are like walking away from the retreats with skills about how do I find like win-wins with my partners in terms of like navigating conflict, or how do I make decisions inclusively? I mean, that's such a big thing for parents, how to do that on a day-to-day basis so both partners feel included in it. And how do you even make like agreements with your partner about going to the macro? How to identify mm-hmm. like what you guys value as a couple, like what's important to you guys, what makes you guys, you know? Sure. So I walk all of the couples like through that process, that journey for 5 weeks.
Awesome. That sounds really helpful. Yeah. I mean, again, to the points that you've been making throughout this, it sounds like anybody could really benefit from these skills. We're not taught how to be parents specifically, and we're also not often taught how to be couples unless you have like some stellar unicorn magical example of how to function as a couple. It's a work in progress, and this kind of help giving people something to hold on to that they can both refer back to, like have a common understanding and have a set of tools is just, it changes so much.
Like you were just saying too, because it like, you can call back to those moments. It doesn't have to be about necessarily like feelings. Like for example, like the water, let's go back to the water. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Charlie and I have an agreement. We have an agreement between the two of us that we made as like consenting adults that we take care of each other.
Mm-hmm.
So part of taking care of each other is receiving care and offering care.
Mm-hmm.
So if I would have refused the water, like I could say like, I wasn't holding true to my agreement with you. I apologize.
Mm-hmm.
Like it can be about the agreement. It doesn't have to necessarily be, I mean, and that's like, there's a lot of power in that because then you can clean it up faster.
We
agreed that you would care for me and you blew me off when I needed water. Like what's up with that, man? You know, like,
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh, yes, you're right. I agreed to it. It's a specific thing that we said we would do to each other. So you're not calling anyone a jerk or anything like that. You're saying, like, you messed up on the agreement. And like, I'm going to hold us both to the agreements we make with each other. So it's a powerful skill that, I had to learn as a couple therapists because nobody taught me.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's great. These are so just tangible and useful. And I think sometimes too, so simple in a way that it escapes our just like, oh yeah, we can just do that. It doesn't have to be complex and complicated. The feelings might be complex and complicated, but the communication can be a little bit more tidy and straightforward.
I love that. Cause then also think about an early parenthood. You need like tidy, straightforward communication. There isn't a lot of resources to go into a deep dive about like you and like everything you've always done. You know, like you guys can find ways and like, and I want to help people because like I said, keep saying this again and again and again. Like I did not know how to do this. My husband did not know how to do this.
Right.
We literally, all it took was education and good intentions and like a generous heart for us messing up.
Sure. Oh, I love that. That's beautiful. that is so good. And again, like very like bringing it down to the core of what you can hold on to when you're communicating. Oh, that's good. So for those couples out there who are super struggling and who don't feel like this is possible or whatnot, what have you seen? What would you say to those folks? How can we help them feel like they have hope?
I mean, I have seen in my clinical work, like just massive transformations. When partners can get support in better understanding themselves and why they do the things that they do that gets in the way of receiving care or offering care or doing any of like the kind of secure functioning principles, they can take responsibility for themselves and they can change. That awareness is like the key. And we can teach couples like that awareness. Like, why do you think you pushed your partner away? Like they probably didn't even realize they did.
Oh, sure. Right. Yeah. You know? It might be so automatic.
Exactly. Because if you weren't offered secure attachment as a child, like being that needy is going to be very scary for you.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to bring up like alarm bells that are going to be like in your implicit memory. And we talk about this in the book and make it as simple as understanding as possible. And so like understanding yourself, your own alarm bells, like what happens to you when you're needy or what happens to you when your partner's needy can be like a game changer.
Totally. No, as you're talking about it, I mean, I know as a therapist and clinician that when you're doing the work with a therapist, it's a non-judgmental environment. Not a lot of people know that about therapy who haven't been in therapy before. Some of the ways in which I think reasons people don't want to go to therapy is because it is vulnerable. And, you know, you could, if you're used to being judged, you could fear that it's just going to be another place and another way that you're going to be made to feel bad. So I just, in all of the things that you're describing, I know that this is all done non-judgmentally in these therapeutic settings. And just, and that is so clear in the book also. For those couples out there who are like not sure how this could help and are worried about the judgment, and just, I know that is how you work and that's how all of us therapists work. So like taking that judgments part out of the way can, and the fear of judgment can like help people get to therapy.
Yeah. I think what you're talking about is having like partners be non-judgmental towards each other and creating that safe space where like creating that safe, like working space where they can practice being different with each other.
Yeah.
And that's like, yeah. And I feel like such tenderness in my body about everybody struggling with their partnership. I mean, Michelle Obama in the book Becoming has a moment where she had to like contend with who she picked as a partner.
Sure.
And she had to re-pick him again. She decided to repick him again. She, of course, didn't have to. Nobody has to do anything, you know, but she decided to repick Barack again. And I love it that she put that in the book because it really normalizes that experience that happens a lot of time in the parenthood initiation in partnership, where you get to pick your partner again.
Yeah.
And like say, like, yeah, it's you, it's me. And like enter it, like create that base of acceptance by reinvesting in the relationship again, maybe letting your old relationship and the patterns that went with it die, let them go, and and create new patterns. And of course, this is not like an overnight thing. This is a journey.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, that couple therapy could help. Hopefully my book is helpful. The retreats might be helpful. Just talking with your partner after listening to this podcast and like maybe proposing an idea. I would like us to be closer. What do you think? You know, I really I love you. I'm glad I picked you. Sometimes it's hard for me to be with you. I mean, all of this is like really real.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and just starting any kind of conversation about like, I want something different together. I want something that I didn't see growing up, that you didn't see growing up. Let's do something like radical, like together. Let's blaze our own path. Let's be pioneers. Let's, you know, change it up. And like, let's figure out what that means to us.
Awesome. Thank you so much for all of this goodness. Things that, you know, even from folks listening to this conversation today can take into their day today if they want or need to. It's so useful. And the book is awesome. And I just thank you so much for being here today and sharing with us your experience and your passion and your hope for couples.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. This was so fun.
Thank you so much, Kara, for being with us. Those of you who are out there listening, if you would like to learn more about Kara's work, the book, or her workshops, you can go to karahoppe.com or find her on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook. You can also connect with Dr. Stan Tatkin on Instagram and Facebook. We truly hope this has brought you some enlightenment, something to think about, and something that's usable in your day-to-day life. Thank you so much for being with us. Until next time. Thank you so much for joining us today. Please share this podcast. Together we can support moms and families so that no one has to deal with this alone. Come connect with us at momandmind.com.
If you're a parent, I invite you to join us at the Mindful Mama podcast, where it's all about becoming a less irritable, more joyful parent. With sometimes hilarious and always thought-provoking experts and friends, at Mindful Mama, we know that you cannot give what you do not have. And when you have calm and peace within, then you can give it to your children. I'm Hunter Clark Fields, and I can't wait to see you there. Listen in to the Mindful Mama podcast.